We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and today is August 27th, and there were some famous birthdays on this day. Now, I'm going to list four of them. Confucius was born in 551 BC. Now, that's hard to beat. But also, George Hegel was born. They spelled it here with an E on the end. George spelled it without a G. My father, George, uses a G. So does my nephew, George. So does my friend, George. But George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel, there's only one G and it's not at the end. Anyway, Hegel was born in 1770. A famous German philosopher. And Lyndon Johnson was born on August 27th in 1908. U.S. president from 1963 to 1968, brought us the Great Society and the Vietnam War. And Agnes Gana Bohaxi was born in 1910, better known to the world as Mother Teresa. And Mother Teresa passed away a few years. In fact, she's on the fast track. The Pope is thinking of making her a saint and short-circuiting the normal process. You know, usually you have to wait a certain number of years. It's almost like the Baseball Hall of Fame. But they're going to waive the rules in this case. So what that tells me is that actually the path to sainthood within the Catholic Church is not quite as taken quite as seriously as the path to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, because they don't waive the rules for anybody. They didn't waive the rules for Babe Ruth. They didn't waive the rules for Mickey Mantle or Joe DiMaggio. And they're not going to waive the rules for Barry Bonds. But the Pope is probably going to waive the rules for Mother Teresa and make her a saint a little quicker than usual. Anyway, let's move on and let's talk a little bit about the situation in Iraq, because the president made an interesting statement last week. He was in Kansas City, Missouri. Once you've lived in Missouri, you pronounce it Missouri and not Missouri, as a lot of people do. But you pronounce Kansas City still Kansas City. And what's interesting was the president, you know, he's dipped into the Vietnam legacy before, but not quite a bit. I mean, not too much. Well, that's real articulate. Not too much. The time he did it before, he was passing through Vietnam last year, and a reporter said, "Mr. President, is there any lesson for you about Iraq from Vietnam, our situation in Vietnam?" And he said, "Yeah. The lesson is, if you leave, you lose." Well, that is not the lesson of Vietnam. But what's interesting is the right and the left, conservatives and Republicans, don't agree about the lessons of Vietnam. And I didn't really realize that till we went into Iraq. I thought everybody understood the lessons of Vietnam, but the right and the conservatives drew a whole nother set of lessons. And you hear about the air revealing that they didn't draw the right lessons. Because I'm going to tell you what the right lessons are. But here's the president last week saying, quote, "One unmistakable legacy of Vietnam is that the price of American withdrawal was paid by millions of innocent citizens whose agonies would add to our vocabulary new terms like boat people, re-education camps, and killing fields." Now, he gave this speech at the Veterans of Foreign Wars National Convention. Of course, Bush very rarely appears in front of an audience of non-military Americans. He's often in front of the troops because he's a war president and he might get booed in front of any other audience. But what's interesting is that he believes that the lesson of Vietnam is that we pulled out too early, we should have tried harder, whatever it is. And the lesson that you hear from conservatives or right-wing talk show hosts and average Americans that think, boy, I don't see how we got beat. You know, we are the United States of America. We were undefeated until Vietnam. suddenly, well, as Bill Murray said in Stripes, we're 10-1. No, that he's got that wrong. We were 10-0-1, meaning we didn't. No one won the Vietnam War, right? It was a draw, but we pulled out. So I'd call that a tie. But what's interesting is when you listen to right-wing talk show hosts talk about Vietnam, what they say is, well, the politicians in Washington tied the hands of the military. If they'd been unleashed and allowed to essentially bomb whatever they want with whatever weapons we had, read nuclear weapons, then we'd have won. What those folks don't understand about the geopolitical situation is the United States is never going to go out there and unleash all its weapons. Just because we have some of the most awesome weapons in the world doesn't mean we will ever use them. We lose all moral authority if we drop nuclear weapons on Vietnam, Iraq, or any other country. We will not be the next country to use a nuclear weapon. I've been saying this since people told me in 1990 that Bush should drop an atom bomb on Baghdad and really show those Iraqis what for. No, he shouldn't have. He didn't. He would never have used a nuclear weapon. That was outside the realm of possibility. And people that think we should use them, or we should just carpet bomb Vietnam, or we should use them in Iraq, the problem is they think that because we have all this hard power, military power, that we shouldn't get pushed around. We should be able to dictate terms to everybody. No, it ends up that soft power is more important, economic power, our ability to persuade, our ability to build a coalition. But this is such a blue state concept that the red staters all say, oh, you're weak on defense when you make this argument. But in fact, even the most conservative president gets in and wouldn't drop a nuclear weapon unless we were attacked first with a nuclear weapon. So the president's comparing it to Vietnam, and he really gets on a slippery slope here or on dangerous ground, because last week he made the case that what's going on here is in Iraq could end up like Cambodia. Well, he's misreading the lessons of Southeast Asia. There is a great deal of disagreement among historians about whether or not the United States is pulling out of Vietnam had anything to do with the rise of the Khmer Rouge in Cambodia, and therefore the 2 million people that died in the killing fields made famous in the movie of the same name. First of all, that was Cambodia, not Vietnam. Secondly, one argument has been made that it was our excursion into Cambodia that destabilized the country and allowed Pol Pot to come to power and then wreak havoc. Right? We had the secret bombing of Cambodia. We went across the border because Vietnam was getting supplies from there. But it's not at all clear, the lesson that the president draws. But of course, the problem with this president is he exhibits an awful lot of black and white thinking. And I don't think he does it just for political purposes. I believe that what he's doing is he is, in fact, always juxtaposing right and wrong, black and white, us versus them. And he really thinks things are that simple. So his attitude is, well, we pulled out of Vietnam, and then they had the killing fields, therefore it happened because we pulled out. Not at all clear from historians' point of view. But back to drawing the wrong lessons from Vietnam. Here's a quick summary, and then we're going to get into a little more detail. The quick summary is this, that Republicans argue the lesson of Vietnam is we didn't go all out. We should have gone all out and won. I heard Melanie Morgan on, I think it was Hardball, about 2 or 3 weeks ago. We talked about it on the show here. And she made the case that we should unleash the military in Iraq, and we have to go into these towns and not be afraid to lay waste to them, like when we were in Fallujah in 2004. You know, we shouldn't have given the civilians time to get out. That let some of the terrorists gave them time to get out. We should have gone in and just bombed Fallujah. And yes, there'd be collateral damage, but you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. Those aren't her words, but you know the metaphor. And yet, that's not how we operate. We are being careful. In the wake of some soldiers who've been accused of, you know, atrocities, killing citizens, killing Iraqi citizens, and doing other things, rape, we're now training our soldiers to be more careful. Now, yes, it's true we're at war. It's true war is hell. But you have to win not just the war, but you have to win the peace. And the only way you get the local population on your side is if they trust you, that you're there to help them. And in fact, one of the reasons we're having better success against Al-Qaeda in Iraq up in Anbar province is the Sunni population and their militias have turned on Al-Qaeda in Iraq because Al-Qaeda in Iraq is vicious and takes no prisoners. Anyway, that's the red state of mind that says we need to bomb more. We'd have won Vietnam if we'd bombed more, if we'd been tougher, if we'd been willing to kick butt and take more casualties on both sides, etc. On the left, the blue state of mind says the reason we shouldn't have gone into Iraq is we should have known we weren't willing to go all out. We weren't willing to be totally ruthless. And yet we came, went into an area of the country, of the world that has a certain ruthlessness. And there are atrocities. And those folks are often willing to get down in the trenches and fight it out, bloody fight after bloody fight, whether there's beheadings or there's killings of all kinds. The principle is, don't go in unless you're ready to do the job. And we know we're never going to go all out. Now, the conservatives say the answer is just go all out. No, you have to understand how geopolitics works. We lose our moral authority if we go that route. So we knew before we went in that we were going to play a fairly careful war. Even Bush knew that. I guess if the average American had known it, that is the average conservative American like Melanie Morgan, then maybe she'd have said, well, then we shouldn't go in. But I doubt it. I doubt if they'd have said that. In any case, the blue state of mind says, we should have seen this coming, and soft power works a lot better. You enlist allies, and you isolate countries. You withhold what they want, or when they behave properly, you give them what they want, and you elicit cooperation. Because you can bomb a country back to the Stone Age, but you'll sow resentment among the people. So it's self-defeating in many ways. And if you're in a red state of mind, you tend not to see that. In any case, the Andy Finn Show is going to come back in just a moment. But what we're going to do when we come back is talk about the legacy of a man who has quite a bit of knowledge about the history of Vietnam. Robert McNamara wrote a book in 1995 called In Retrospect. It was the first of the three books he wrote about the Vietnam War. He was the Secretary of Defense during the Kennedy administration and the first part of the Johnson administration. And he knows of what he speaks, and you will be surprised to hear the 11 lessons that he took out of Vietnam and believes America should take because the Bush administration violated all 11 of them going into Iraq.
Richard B. Cheney swears that Pat lay in public like so much hot air. Insists he and Bush care, waits for the weapons, still thinks Iraq was a threat to the U.S. homeland. I can't understand all the Bush appointees. Where do they all come from? all the angry people, where do they all belong? Rabbit and Coulter, writing the words to a book that reflects a strange fear. Who would come near? Look at her whining, blaming opponents and damning up dubious foe. Is it for show? All the right-wing parrots, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong? Look at all the angry people. Look at all the angry people. Ambassador Bolton hates the UN, but now he is a part of it all. He's got some gall, push the divider, renominates right-wing judges, no change in his tone. And he's not alone, all the angry people, where do they all come from? All the angry people, where do they all belong?
We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and we're talking about Iraq and Vietnam. The president, because desperate times call for desperate statements, the president, in his speech to the Veterans of Foreign Wars conference, came out and compared Iraq to Vietnam and said, woe betide you, as my second grade teacher used to say. We dare not pull out because there'll be a bloodbath. Well, it's possible, although he's been wrong about virtually every prediction he's made about Iraq, so I'm not sure why this one would be true. But I'm arguing that the president has taken the wrong lessons from Vietnam. And not simply that the killing fields in Cambodia were not a direct result of our pulling out of Vietnam, but because the red state of mind assumes that the lesson of Vietnam is that we failed to try hard enough. We failed to unleash our military. We failed to use all the weapons at our disposal. We failed to lay waste to the country, as though that would have won it for us. No, there's a little thing called home court advantage. And home field advantage means that you can keep a population down for a while if you're on their turf, but eventually, because they live there and they own the houses and farms and land and the animals, and they got their families there, they're going to feel more strongly about the situation and their land and their freedom than you are. And they're eventually going to toss you out. And that's the lesson of Vietnam. At least it's one of them. Let's get more specific with the lessons of Vietnam, though, because I want to remind people about Robert McNamara's list. In 1995, Robert McNamara published his book, In Retrospect. And if you weren't listening to this list and knew that it was coming from the lessons he believes we should draw from Vietnam, you would swear you were listening to a list of criticisms about our excursion into Iraq. So here's Robert McNamara's list of the 11 mistakes America made going into Vietnam. Quote, we misjudged then, and we have since, the geopolitical intentions of our adversaries, and we exaggerated the dangers to the United States of their actions. Well, that applies to Iraq in spades. We misjudged the geopolitical intentions of our adversaries. The president claimed that Saddam wanted to give terrorists an atomic bomb so they could attack a U.S. country. There was no evidence of that. In fact, Saddam is a secularist and didn't really get along with terrorist groups. And also, we exaggerated the danger to the United States of their actions. Oh, I think we got that one pretty much covered. Can anyone say WMD and mushroom cloud over an American city? The words coming out of the mouths of Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, and George Bush in the run-up to the Iraq War. McNamara's second mistake the United States made in Vietnam. Quote, We viewed the people and leaders of South Vietnam in terms of our own experience. We totally misjudged the political forces within the country, which is why we have George W. Bush saying that we can sow democracy in the Middle East, and that an election means we've got democracy. No, democracy comes when you have institutions in place, a variety of civic and governmental institutions. It's not enough to hold elections. But we tend to see these things through our experience. If you want to get a good read on this, go to Wikipedia, or better yet, just type in Spiral Dynamics or Don Beck and look up the 8 stages of Spiral Dynamics. The nice thing about this model as a model of development is it applies to both people, that is individuals, and it applies to organizations or countries. And when you see the level of development at the U.S., we're at what Beck calls the orange level of development. Okay, organizational development. I mean, we're at the organizational level, governmental level, capitalist level, economic security level. And what happens is, at whatever level you're at of development, you assume that what motivates the people you're negotiating with is the same thing. But it's not, because if you're not at the same level, you're not interested in the same rewards. So we assumed that everybody wants democracy, and they want freedom, and so we just need to give it to them. No, if you're at the red level, which I would argue Iraq is, that's the third level of development, you're interested in much different things, because it's a level of tribal development. And so you're interested in having your tribe survive and have power, not having a democracy where the majority protects the rights of the minority. So McNamara's second choice, we view the leaders of our adversaries in terms of our own experience rather than their experience. The third mistake and lesson of Vietnam, according to Robert McNamara, quote, we underestimated the power of nationalism to motivate a people to fight and die for their beliefs and values. Think about the U.S. If a country attacked us, well, they did. 9/11, Pearl Harbor, we rally. And we say, nobody can beat the United States. You get us riled, and we will kick butt. Why do we think that when you get another country riled, they won't be nationalistic? We went into their country, and then we're surprised when they want to throw us out. Or when Al-Qaeda can use it, Al-Qaeda in Iraq can use it to get recruits. Donald Rumsfeld said he didn't know if there were more terrorists now than we were killing. He said that was the big question. This is back in 2003, the end of 2003, early 2004. You can predict. People did predict. I predicted that plunking 140,000 troops down in the middle of the Middle East was going to be trouble. It was going to increase the radicalism and increase the number of terrorists. Now, if you think you can kill them all, go for it. But it's trying to solve this problem through military power, hard power, when in fact the ultimate solution is political and it comes with soft power. McNamara's fourth lesson from Vietnam that also applies to Bush's war in Iraq. Quote, our judgments of friend and foe alike reflected our profound ignorance of history, culture, and politics of the people in the area and the personalities and habits of their leaders. Well, let me start with the last part, the personalities and habits of their leaders. It's interesting that now everybody seems to be blaming the fact that we've got this fiasco in Iraq on Maliki, the Iraqi leader. You know, the Bush administration chose him and backed him over the previous guy, whose name escapes me at the moment. But the notion that somehow he's to blame for all this, no, we chose him, we put him there, and we put him in a pretty impossible situation. He may be a weak leader, he may be whatever, but these people don't have any experience with democracy. So the idea that you expect them to come to the table and compromise and cut up a loaf may be unrealistic. So we misjudge the leaders and the personalities, but also part of number four is our judgments of our allies and our foes reflected, quote, our profound ignorance of the history, culture, and politics of the people in the area. Sunni and Shia have been feuding for 1,400 years, many would say longer, and we think we're going to go in and get them to reconcile, and the surge is going to give us an extra 6 months, 9 months, maybe now more than a year, to talk them into reconciling? Are we out of our minds? The fifth mistake that we made, and the fifth item that Robert McNamara, former defense secretary during the Vietnam War, said the U.S. should learn from Vietnam, quote, we failed then and have since to recognize the limitations of modern high-tech military equipment, forces, and doctrine. We failed as well to adapt our military tactics to the task of winning the hearts and minds of people from a totally different culture. Let's take the first half of that. We failed to recognize the limitations of modern high-tech military equipment, forces, and doctrine. This gets us back to what we were just talking about, the red state of mind, blue state of mind, and the fact that if you're in a red state of mind, you think the military should just be unleashed, they should lay waste to a country, and then we'll win and we'll show them. Because they can't stand the idea that we have the best military in the world and the most dangerous weapons, and somehow we feel powerless. We cannot turn that into victory. And the reason is, if you're in a blue state of mind, you understand that you've got to have some hearts and minds left at the end to win over. So if you lay waste to the country, you build resentments, and you kill a lot of people's relatives. But if you work with them, and you minimize civilian casualties, and you build them schools and the things that the Bush administration was trying to do but didn't do very well, now you got something going. The other part, we failed to adapt our tactics to the task of winning the hearts and minds. Well, there's a couple things to say about that. One is that we are doing some of that in terms of, soldiers walking around and working with the people, meeting the people, giving candy to the kids, all of that. But in terms of military tactics, the problem I have with the surge is that the president goes in and he spends, what does he spend? He spends 3 years, better part of 4 years, jerking around, not doing much, and not getting very far. And then when the Iraq Study Group report comes out and says, you have to change course, everybody expects him to start withdrawing. He says, now we're going to treat it like a counterinsurgency. We need a counterinsurgency. People were telling you for 2 years it was a civil war and that we had an insurgency. And the vice president said, well, it's in its last throes. It was not in its last throes, of course. Dick Cheney's been wrong about just about everything. But my irritation is that it took him 4 years to decide that there was an insurgency to fight. And Bush has used up his chits. He's tried and tried and tried. And I just don't trust him to try anymore. Now, the difficulty is you can't just pull out. In any case, I know this is a depressing list, so we better take a break. And when we come back, we will finish Robert McNamara's list of the 11 mistakes that he learned from and the 11 things we should do differently in a situation like Vietnam.